Countdown to Kickoff on the Source 620 CKRM. In the stadium, on the field, and in the locker room, no one else brings you this level of access to Canada's team. We're live on air and streaming around the world at 620CKRM.com. Countdown to Kickoff starts now.
Good afternoon, Rider Nation, and welcome to the West Final, Part 2, Winnipeg Edition. I'm Ballsy. 2 years ago, when the last West Final was held, it was at Mosaic Stadium, and a banged-up Cody Fajardo spotted Kyron Moore open in the end zone late in the contest. But a crossbar got in the way, sent the Riders to defeat and the Bombers to their first Grey Cup win in almost 30 years. 2 years later, everybody's talking about a juggernaut Bomber team about to win back-to-back Grey Cup championships. Today, it's snowy and cold, IG Field in the Peg. The Riders will try and overcome a heavy rash of injuries to defeat a favored Bombers team that hasn't played a meaningful game since late October. I count myself as the luckiest guy in the CFL because this show is loaded with championship opinion. I'm joined by former champs Wes Cates, Mike McCullough, Manny Arsenault, Luke Molitor, Zach Evans, and John Ryan. The best CFL broadcast kicks off now. From sideline to sideline, we've got you covered. Countdown to Kickoff is on the Rider Radio Network.
Saskatchewan source for Canada's team. Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Bronc Beer and Bronc Light, a great Buckin' beer brewed in the West and now available in Saskatchewan. And by Farm Boy Realty. Put a farm boy to work for you selling Southeast Saskatchewan farmland. FarmBoyRealty.com. The source, 620 CKRM.
And Ballsy in studio at the corner of 12th and Rose on this winter wonderland of a Sunday. It's Championship Sunday. Ballsy along with Mike McCullough and Wes Cates. The early game at last I saw, and we're trying to get our TV to load up here. Argos were beating Hamilton 3-0. Yeah, football weather out there, fellas. Football weather. This is football weather, right?
This is a little past football weather right here.
Yeah, so let's talk about this, fellas. This reminds me of, Mike, this reminds me of 2010.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is not even as bad as 2010, because it was, what, minus 33 then?
Yeah.
This is, what, minus 23?
Yeah, but you guys didn't have a lot of, there wasn't a lot of precipitation in terms of snow falling that day, if I remember correctly.
Not during, but beforehand, there was snow, like banks and stuff. Like, yeah. There was snow, but it was just ridiculous.
Like, this is going to be the game right here. This is the game.
It's going to be a nightmare.
This is the game.
Yeah, I mean, I love Canadian football, but I'm like, damn, Grey Cup, December 12th?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Move that sucker indoors, guys. Yeah, there's got to be an indoor facility in Hamilton. There's only going to be 1,000 people there anyway, so just find somewhere play. You know, like a high school gym. Let's do it.
That's funny. Wes, I mean, this presents a whole bunch of challenges.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess it's going to be who can run the ball a little better, or which quarterback can handle the ball the best, I think, is going to be a big key to the game. But for sure, the weather, nobody loves to play in this stuff, but some guys can handle it a little better and kind of block it out and make the best
really,
of it.
Canadians.
Canadians.
Right. I think, you know,
yeah, Canadians do it. Yeah. If you're a Californian like a Shaq or a Cody, like Manny said a couple of weeks ago, you're grumpy and you're cold. You don't want to be grumpy and cold.
Yeah, the worst is when you're practicing in it and guys are, like, you're trying to get your reps in and it's just guys are freezing. They just want to get the heck out of here.
Yeah,
it's tough. I think the practice time, the lead up is probably the worst part because you just start. Yeah. Realizing how bad it's going
to
be.
Hopefully your coach has some sense and tries to get you indoors at an indoor facility if you can get one.
Yeah, I mean, but. Yeah, we couldn't even, I think 13 couldn't get one either.
So what's the key to this game? Is it really come down to just protecting the football? Because I feel the team that either doesn't turn it over or turns it over the fewest, I mean, that's the way it generally is in every game, Wes.
Right.
But you got to protect the football.
Yeah, for sure. But it gets a little tougher when it's cold. I swear, sometimes it's like you don't even feel the ball when you're holding it because it's that cold. And then, you know, like you were saying, if there's some precipitation or if it's a little humid, then you get sweaty, icy, cold, ball gets slippery. Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, so let's go over the cold implications. You guys, sleeves or no sleeves?
I'm always no sleeves.
Yeah.
It's just being stupid. We're all trying to use the toughest.
You? Yeah. No sleeves or sleeves?
It looks tough. If I was a defensive player, I might wear sleeves, but definitely.
Defensive players are tougher.
Yeah.
That's what I said. It looks tough, but no, I never wore sleeves.
You all heard it.
I couldn't wear sleeves as a running back. I just needed to know where the ball. You got to feel the ball when you have sleeves on. You don't even really know the ball's there. I guess, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like it's just you don't have the same feel for the ball, so it gets poked out and stuff easier.
And having sleeves doesn't really make that much of a difference, I don't think. No, it's minus 25.
Okay, so here's one for you. Here's one for you because I watched it in the Vanier Cup yesterday. That was a really slippery track.
Oh, there was a Vanier Cup yesterday.
Yeah.
Just looking at sports, you wouldn't know there was even a Vanier Cup.
Embarrassing.
But
we'll talk about that coming up in our Growing the Game segment. Great. But I will tell you this: as the Argos lead Hamilton 6-0 late in the first quarter. When you look at this weather, though, in this field, what kind of shoes are you looking to wear in something like this?
I think you're just wearing the regulars. I mean, you can't. I know. What was it? What year was that with Miller? He tried the. We were in Edmonton. I think it's when they sold the grass. It was 09 or 10. He bought a bunch of broom ball shoes.
Yeah.
They look like moon boots. We tried them on in practice, like, no. It was a nightmare. It was a great attempt, but guys wearing them, we looked so ridiculous, and they were even worse than wearing slippers out there.
So what do you wear? Like, just the regular, like, sneakers? Like, or do you wear regular football cleats? Or what would you wear here?
Well, what is it? The 11 studs? Like, the rubbery? Yeah. The ones that kind of have the most studs that go into the ground. You know, back in the day, guys used to be able to wear like three quarter inch
or an inch.
Yeah.
Used to have the screw ons.
Yeah, you could have the longer screw ins, but they stopped letting you do that. So I think 3/4 as far as
is that. So you can't do the screw ins anymore?
I don't think you can do.
No,
the
I don't
inch.
Think you can. No, yeah, you
so,
can't.
Yeah, so it'd be the 11.
The 11 studs. Yeah, okay, yeah. So let's go from each side of the ball. We'll start with you, Wes, in terms of running the football. Whether you're Andrew Harris, who's a game time decision, Oliveira, Augustine, Morrow, Powell, LaFrance, whoever. Like, in terms of running, you know, how would you approach running the football? Is it like, I see a hole, not a lot of cutting, I'm just going north and south?
You try to make it look like you're going to be doing a lot of juking just to get, you know what I mean, the defense
little flat head action,
Yeah. But, yeah, everything's downhill because you know your subtle movement is going to, you know what I mean, cause more slipping and sliding for the defense. So you try to get guys moving laterally, but the whole time you're like, I'm taking this downhill.
So, and for you, is it more film work on this side of the ball where you're anticipating, you have to be more anticipatory in your play? Like, this is what's going to happen, and I'm going to guess, not guess, but an educated guess, it's going to come here, and that's where I'm going. Because you don't have you can't cut either.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? With this new turf, though, it's better than it was 20 years ago. I mean, the footwear isn't as big a factor as it was like in my early years, like when you had you know some grass fields and the turf was like, you know, the old astro turf.
This
new turf, you'd be surprised after they shovel it, like it's still pretty like malleable, like you can get your studs in there. So it is a bit of a concern, but as you're playing, like, you know, I remember back in 10 and stuff, it was just the cold. It wasn't so much the footwear, it was the cold that just got to it.
Well, and you talked about this on a previous post-game show, how the Calgary Stampeders in, what was it, 2013, they had no... Even 2010, they had no, they didn't even want to play.
2010.
They didn't want to play.
Yeah, like I mentioned previous times before, I remember I hit Hank on a play, and I was on top of him. He's just like, oh, just stay there for a second. Like, he's just, he was so cold. Like, I know Hank. It was kind of weird, but I know Hank. And then guys, like, I could hear Calgary guys when we were changing defensive specials and stuff. Guys like, man, I just want to get the hell out of here. Like, on Calgary, we're just saying, it's about mental toughness. It's a big factor today. If you go in and you're not mentally tough, you're done.
Like Wally always used to say, and Manny's going to talk about this later, Wally always used to say that you can tell if a guy's ready to play in this weather if you watch him in warm-ups and he's the same as he would be, you know, take the elements out of it, but the same mentally going through his stuff as he would be in a July game. And if you see the guys off, you know it's going to be a long day.
Something like that. I don't know. I might try to hang out in the locker room a little longer on a day like that. You know, but when you get out there and actually go to work warming up, you're kind of just doing what you would normally do, getting ready, trying to do everything the same. You know, some guys have to do everything the same to feel right for the game. And I think if you're that type of person and you change it up because of the weather, you're in trouble.
Both of your kind of games. Like, you like defensive games. This is bully ball. Like, you like bully ball. It's going
to
be.
And I liked it because it slowed everybody down, which made it more in par with my speed level. Like, during winter games, my wife's like, you looked really fast today. I'm like, thanks. Yeah, I know.
Well, that's good. It is bully ball, though, Wes. Yeah. Like, this is what you like. Let's smash mouth. Let's Powell this thing. Let's win this game this way.
Yeah, for sure. And weather like this, I like to see defensive guys hesitating. The worst thing I hate to see is, like just defensive guys just shooting the lane. You know what I mean? Because it forces you to have to cut off of them. And you might be able to make a miss, but then you got to slow down, study your feet. And then the next guy's coming like a bat out of hell, right? So Yeah, you just got to play hard, fast, and if a couple guys slip and a dude takes it the distance, so be it. But you can't be stuck, you know what I mean, feet in the snow, slipping, sliding, looking stupid. Yeah. I'd rather whiff than
is the weather in Winnipeg exactly the same
like
here
this,
right now?
Yes, like this.
Okay, so
if the game now in a game like this, long drive, short drives. Do you think we'll see a lot more longer drives in this game? And is it harder in a defense long drives in the cold weather?
I think with these two defenses, I don't think we're gonna see a lot more long drives, because I mean this benefits the Riders, because
does it even the playing field?
I think more so for when it benefits the Riders, because the Winnipeg offense is quite explosive, right? And the Riders, we obviously know, are not.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think this definitely helps out, because you're gonna have that explosive element really diminished in this weather. So, but the thing is, they have a good run game. We got a solid run game. Good two great defenses. So yeah, it shouldn't be a lot of long drives, because I don't imagine a lot of 15 to 25 yard runs being broken off, but we'll see how it plays
look at
out.
The Toronto game there. It's sold out, mostly Hamilton fans, but it's it looks like Florida.
Yeah, no.
compared to this, it looks like you're like, okay, well, maybe we could have the Grey Cup in Hamilton next week, December the 12th. Okay, let's go through the different positions like we did last week, Wes. Mike wasn't a part of this, but we'll go through this. Let's give the edge to each team. Okay, we'll start with the quarterbacks. Who do you give the edge to? I mean, is it pretty easy on that one?
I mean, yeah, if it's going to be about passing and moving the ball around the field, getting it to your playmakers, then you got to give it to Caleros. But I don't know. With this weather, we got to see how Fajardo's running.
Is it a cumulative thing, like you said last week, with the yards on the ground? Because he had 89 yards rushing.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I think that just the way the Riders have kind of, like, the Riders' offense has been so suspect that I don't think Winnipeg really knows what the Riders are going to come out and try to do. I think the Riders' defense kind of understands what the Blue Bombers are going to do. So it's just about kind of sitting back, not letting Caleros beat you deep, keeping everything in front of you, and hopefully he makes a mistake. And then just, you know, getting him off the field in the run game. The run game, if Winnipeg can just continue to run the ball, then the Riders are in trouble. So we're going to have to do some stunts to kind of maybe get them in some second and longs.
Jeremiah Masoli just fumbled the football, and Chris Jones' defense scoops it up. Chris Jones got that Argos defense humming now since coming over here mid-season. Masoli reminds me of a shinier Nealon Green. I don't know what the heck he was doing there. Jeez. He throws the ball on the ground. Wow. Anyway,
that's a shot right there.
Well, damn. He's a good athlete, but
this guy is a former MOP. I mean,
whatever.
Just some Rider fans that might take offense to that. Didn't everybody love Nealon?
I like Nealon, but
Roy did. For sure. In terms of looking at this thing, Mike. And defensively, or sorry, the quarterback. Who do you got in the quarterback?
I think with this weather,
you're going Cody.
It's tough. If I was going to go Caleros, I'd edge slightly to Caleros, just because with this weather, and Cody being able to move the way he moves, and we know Caleros can move okay, but one shot to Caleros and it's night. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be funny, because I mean he's had a lot of head problems, so you got to be careful with that guy.
And that turf is harder now.
Yeah, this whole offense is based around protecting him. So if you have him out running and getting outside the pocket, and he takes a shot, I mean season's over.
Okay, so we're giving Winnipeg a slight edge here. Let's go running backs. Winnipeg, Andrew Harris is a game time decision, Wes, but they have two other good backs, Brady Oliveira from North Dakota, who's a Winnipeg kid, and then Johnny Augustine, the Guelph running back. So they kind of got a three-headed monster there, and they never really missed a beat with Harris on the shelf. I think we'll see a motivated Andrew Harris if he plays, because I think this will, whether he wants to admit it or not, I think this is his last run through Winnipeg at 34 years old, injury prone. They might look at replacing him with those young running backs.
His injury right now?
Knee.
Okay.
He's coming back.
Bigger question is, how much are they paying him? That's what's going to get him gone next year. Exactly.
Yeah, so you got Harris, and then you got the Riders with William Powell, who I liked how they used him last week.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Morrow in there a little bit, and maybe they'll go big a lot here with, you know, LaFrance and stuff. But who do you give the edge to there in the running backs?
The Riders don't seem to want to give anybody but Willie Pete touches, which I don't blame them. I think just with taking the O-lines into account, you got to give the edge to Winnipeg. And I don't know. I don't really care to see Harris play. I'm a Oliveira fan. Yeah, he's rocking 20 too. Yep. So yep. I kind of want to see him have a decent game, but not beat up.
Well, I don't know that he could play. I mean, I don't know how effective he'd be. He hadn't practiced for 55 days and then just came back for a couple
what
of days.
Was it, MCL or what was it?
I think it was MCL. Yeah,
MCL.
Yeah. Yeah. So and he was out. Little knee injury.
All that
there.
Extracurricular with the juice that was giving him all that energy. Wow. I think he tweaked something.
Wow.
So if he's on it, he would have been back earlier.
So who do you give the edge to, Mike?
You got to take the old, I mean, just straight up players right now, you got to go Powell, especially if Harris is injured.
Yeah.
Obviously Powell, but when you take, like Kate said, the O-line into effect, I think the edge goes to Winnipeg.
So let's do the O-line. I guess we're both giving Winnipeg. I mean, that's no shocker. Winnipeg gets the decided advantage.
I don't think we even have to discuss it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, honestly.
No, but next. Yeah. Okay, but let's talk about what, did you see anything that would give you encouragement last week from the Riders offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, they've been slowly getting a little bit better. Yeah. I mean, not we're like, whoa, what a turnaround, but it's like, okay, yeah, they're slowly taking steps, as you'd expect them to, but, I mean, they're not in the realm of the Winnipeg O-line. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even...
Yeah, they just do young guy stuff, man. Sometimes they just, it just seems like they don't really communicate or don't, you know what I mean, or one guy just really does a bad job blocking his assignment. And they have been getting better, like McCullough said, but... It just seems like Winnipeg is just a steady, you know what I mean, solid O-line that doesn't give up, you know what I mean? They don't make mistakes, and this O-line is still going through theirs.
All right, we'll get to more of the breakdown of this game between the Bombers and the Rough Riders, but first let's head out in the Mr. Lube hotline where you get warranty-approved top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the four Mr. Lube Regina locations. It's time now for In the Trenches.
They say most games are decided in the trenches. Countdown to kickoff on 620 CKRM continues as we break down today's battles with Grey Cup champion and former Riders defensive lineman, Zach Evans. It's In the Trenches for Karst Holdings, Integra Tire Assiniboia, your trusted tire expert serving Southern Saskatchewan for the past 25 years. Call 306-642-5557.
Championship Sunday in the CFL as we're getting set for the second half of the doubleheader here, the Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And it is time to head out in the Mr. Lube hotline and talk with our teammate, Zach Evans. Zach, cold weather, did that ever bug you?
No, not at all. I'm from Regina, Saskatchewan. Cold doesn't bother me ever. Probably can't really feel my hands or feet when it gets cold out, but hey, it doesn't really affect me.
Does this weather even the playing field for an underdog team like the Rough Riders going against the powerhouse Bombers?
100%, especially with our ability to run the ball. I feel like that'll even out a lot of things. If you can't throw the ball down the field, it makes it tough on a team that only gets touchdowns and big plays off of trying it down the field, right?
So if we're going to win this game, though, because Winnipeg, when you think running, you think Winnipeg, not only with Harris, but they got Augustine and Oliveira, so they got a three-headed monster there. And I don't even know, as we tape this, if Andrew Harris is going to play. And if he is, he's going to be rusty. The Riders, I like the way they used Powell first off. Did you like the way they used Powell last week?
Yeah, I think that they use him in the best way they could. I feel like there's definitely an opportunity right now with Morrow to make our own little monster in that backfield, just being able to do different things and having different formations and trading out a running back for a running back and stuff like that. I love when Moss brings in more than one running back and kind of confuses the defense because who knows who's getting the ball.
So where I was going with this, though, the second part of this question is Cody had 89 yards rushing. Things break down, he runs, or if he sees something, some space, he takes off. If the Riders are to win today, would it be fair to suggest he'll have to have a similar type of game?
I hope not. I really hope that he's not running for his life, and we're hoping that he wins the game for us on his legs. We got guys that we pay to do that. So I'm hoping that's not the case, but if he sees something and he has an opportunity to make a play, get a touchdown, or get that crucial first down, hey, go take it and sacrifice yourself for the team a couple more times. You know, there's only two games left.
They haven't scored a touchdown against the Bombers, and they haven't scored a second half point against the Bombers. Is that talked about in the locker room, or do you forget all that stuff?
It's a new week, new team. Every week it's different because you learn and you watch more film on your opponents, and it's just a complete reset every single week. So those guys are coming in fresh with a new game plan coming into this game. There's new players everywhere. It's completely fresh. So they're coming into this with a full head of steam, and it's going to be a great game.
Is rust a real thing? Because that's the other thing we've talked about here all week on Sports Talk Radio. Rust. The Bombers will be rusty. They haven't played since October 23rd, a meaningful game. Is that a real thing?
Physically, I don't think so. Downtime or the more games you can take off, it's good for the whole team to get healthy and all those little bumps and bruises go away and you just feel better. Mentally, though, there's definitely rust on that brain because you haven't been playing really competitive football for a couple weeks or even with that bye week. It's tough to just come into this game real fast and start playing to your max efficiency. And I feel like that's the way that we're going to win this game. The Riders coming in and just getting after them early, stepping on their necks early, getting up fast and making sure that they're coming out as fast as possible and making the best of that mental leg that Winnipeg's coming in with.
You know both these quarterbacks well. Are you surprised that Zach Collaros is having the success he's having in Winnipeg? I mean, he was injured here, looked like maybe his career was in doubt. He goes to Toronto. They obviously didn't think much of him because his second go around there, they shipped him off to Winnipeg, and all he's done is played at MOP level now.
Yeah, and I always said that if Zach ever got back to where he was before that concussion, I feel like he'd be the MOP for a few years. And that's what he's showing right now. And that just shows his grit and determination and his ability to come back and his mental fortitude, because it's tough coming back from those kind of hits, especially when you have defenses in this league that are coming for quarterbacks and they love blitzing and they got great D linemen in this league. It's just a testament to his mental fortitude and his ability to come back from a big injury.
You're a guy in your early to mid 30s and you've had some hip issues, serious hip issues. I wouldn't suggest AC Leonard has that, but the hip's a wonky area, isn't it? It's a hip, but it could go to the back. It could go to, you know, it's kind of one of those wonky areas to have an injury. What are you looking for from AC Leonard?
I think AC will be okay. I don't know what the extent of the injury is, but there's things that you can do to loosen up those hips and still play at a very high level. And I think that's where we're going to see it at AC. And if that's his last game or his second last game of the season, man, he's going to go balls to the walls. Yeah. And he's going to do everything that he can to help this team win. So I think everything will be okay.
Now, Micah Johnson's a stud. But when I watch some NFL games, I watch like a Joey Bosa on the Chargers. He's a rush end, but they move him inside to do some things. You see Aaron Donald move all over the field. Can Micah have that ability? Like, does he have that versatility where you could line him up at the end and he could be effective, say, if an AC Leonard can't go at 100%? Well, obviously he won't be 100%, but you know what I mean? If he's not the regular AC Leonard, because Micah's going to have to draw some attention to free up some other guys.
Yeah, and anytime you're over 250 pounds, you don't like being out on the edge, let's be honest. But in the end, if it's a three down D line, he can go on that edge and he can cause havoc out there too. Those tackles aren't used to big boys coming through the middle of them, and Micah is one of those big boys, and he'll run through some guys, but definitely challenging when they start running the ball and bringing tight ends and bringing extra guys on the edge. It's tough to understand what your role is, which guy you're supposed to be putting hands on and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think he's been doing it for a long time and he's great at it, but he's going to have a big game coming up.
How do the Riders win this football game? If you had to pick one key, Zach Evans, how do the Riders punch their ticket to the Grey Cup?
Turn that ball over. Make sure you get your hands on that ball every chance you possibly get, because Zach does get frustrated when he's throwing picks and there's guys dropping balls and there's fumbles going around. So if you can get after him quick, get some hits on him, get some interceptions, get some turnovers of any kind, I think we're going to have a great chance.
Zach, thanks for this, man. I appreciate it. Enjoy the ball game. Hopefully we're talking about the Riders in the Grey Cup.
Oh, that's what it'll be.
The countdown to kickoff is on with The Source, 620 CKRM. Now we check in with the players, coaches, movers, and shakers who help build Canada's league. It's Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Capital GMC. With amazing deals on new and pre-owned vehicles, we drive Rider Nation.
Of course, this segment takes a look back at the rich history of the Canadian Football League, a history I hope we can preserve and build upon. as we continue to grow this three-down game, a game that's kind of in turmoil and in uncertain waters right now. We are going to talk to a guy, Scott Grant, that's been in the photography game for over 40 years with his dad, and they have captured some of the best images in CFL history. This is a look at our great game through the eyes of a lens. Tell us a bit about your dad first.
Well, he passed away last April, which was tough for me because he was the beginning. He was the beginning of everything, you know, for me photographically. He was known as the father of photojournalism in Canada. Some of the best photographers in Canada and North America and actually around the world learned pretty much everything from him. So it was part of his assignments that he worked on as a freelancer when he first started was shooting football games here in Ottawa.
What's the first football game you went to with your dad? Kind of got you hooked.
Yeah, it was 1969. It was a Hamilton Ottawa game. It was, he handed me a camera. I guess I don't even remember asking him to go. He handed me a camera and he said, "There's a roll of film in it. Don't waste it." I sold 6 pictures from that game that were used in one of the CFL programs.
That's awesome.
I was 13 years old at the time.
That's awesome. What do you remember most about that day?
It was a nice day. I don't really remember a whole lot about it. It was a little overwhelming being on the sidelines, and not that I hadn't been there before, because with my dad's involvement with the Rough Riders as their team photographer through the 1960s, we got to know a lot of the players. I mean, I was just a kid, but we had, players over to the house and that kind of thing. So it wasn't like being thrown into a group of strangers that I knew some of the players, but it was still, you're still a 13-year-old kid and you're surrounded by this, but it was just the experience of being there was, and the fans and everything was all just part of it. Now I might just be, kind of trying to think back. I've never really had anybody ask me that question before.
Well, I'm glad it was the first one, but obviously just listening to you, your destiny was already picked for you. Once you got on that field with your dad, got a camera, you weren't going to be anything else but a photographer, right, Scott?
That was it. I wasn't a great student in school, but and I was told in school by the guidance counselor, which is actually interesting, he said photography is a great hobby, but you'll never make a living at it. And I ran into him about 10 years later, and he was unemployed working as a security guard. So, I asked if he remembered me, and he said, yeah. And I said, yeah, so you know what I'm doing? And I told him, and he was, it was a bit of a surprise for him, I think.
After high school, you started working with your dad, as I understand it, and then you kind of got into the football cards, the CFL football cards deal. Tell me about that.
With the Joggle CFL cards. I started playing hockey with a guy I didn't know him at the time.
Yeah.
And he knew I was taking pictures. He'd seen some of the stuff, and this was in 1981, and he was a card collector back then, and there was no CFL cards at the time, and he said, why don't we work on a set? Why don't we put a card set out and see what happens? And so I started supplying the pictures for him, and that was the start of it, and we're still doing the cards now.
Where are these cards distributed? Because we're talking about a crisis with this league, Scott, and trying to get young people on board. I remember as a young kid, I used to get these cards. I love the Vince Goldsmiths, the Joe Pow-Pows, all the old, get all of them. Get the Chris de France back in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. I was on board. Oh, I can't wait to get them. But we need to get young kids involved again. So I don't see these. Where are they being distributed?
The alumni cards.
Yeah.
Not the current ones, but the alumni cards that we're doing it's a very limited number, and they're only sold to some of the longtime collectors that are buying them. Nothing goes into the stores. We lost the contract to Upper Deck.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna badmouth Upper Deck. They, for what they did and how they approached the cards. They didn't approach the cards the same way that Joggle did, which was any player that wanted to be in the set could be in the set. We didn't make the selections. The players themselves.
Ah, interesting.
The players themselves, and the players actually bought into the cards themselves. So if a player at the time wanted to be in the set, he could have been anybody. It didn't matter. I think he paid $75 to be in the set. He got to pick his card. He wrote his bio. He got 500 free cards, and he could order more if he wanted. And it was more inclusive for the league. We were always the best kept secret of the CFL. We kind of got, you know, pushed aside a few times by other card companies that went, you know, that never made it through, and they just, but we kept doing the card.
Interesting.
We had a following.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, Scott, you understand the game of football, I'm going to assume. How much does that help you when you're taking pictures of a sporting event, to understand the sports, to anticipate? Because a lot of the, and I'm on the sidelines doing sideline reporting during Saskatchewan Rough Rider games.
Yeah.
So I'm around all these photographers, and I marvel at, you got to anticipate what's going to come to get that great shot. So obviously you got to know what you're watching or looking out for.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I played, you know, senior flag and senior touch for 40 years. And in that I played all the positions, which it's a tiny learning piece. But when I watch the games, because shooting, and it still goes back to the Joggle cards, I was given a list of 40 players I needed to shoot. So I had to shoot all the linemen. So by watching the center, watching the guards, watching the tackles, watching how they are reacting, who's pulling, who's going where, I had to anticipate some of the plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I was basically calling my own plays. I could figure out when it was going to be a passing play. I could figure out when it was going to be, you know, run, which is, it's pretty basic. Looking at the defensive setups, watching for blitzes, and I would isolate on one player. Now, a lot of times there's a lot of luck involved, but it all came down to just really paying attention, staying away from all the other photographers. They need yards. I would go way downfield and wait for the play to come to me. That happened quite often. Everybody else would be packed up waiting for something to happen at the line of scrimmage, and, you know, a long bomb, and I'm the only one standing down there by myself. Everything was anticipation, and I actually had some of the players asking me, like, on the sidelines about what was coming up. And
oh, that's neat.
And so it was, okay, this is how I see what's going to happen.
Photographer and, / offensive coordinator Scott Grant.
I would yell at players. I was yelling when the ball was in the air. Everybody else is quiet. What it came to was, I really felt like I was part of the team. As a team member,
when you're taking pictures, you're invading their space. You're invading their workplace. It'd be like you sitting in my control room taking a picture of me doing this interview. There's got to be some sort of ease, some sort of trust factor. How much relationship building goes into it for you? Because I know me, I have good relationships with people around the league where I consider them sources. They can tell me stuff. They can trust me that I'm not going to hang them out to dry. You have the same type of situation as a photographer?
Absolutely. It goes back to what my dad always taught me about photography was, you can't be part of the picture. You've got to stand back. And so I took that with me, and always respect the boundaries. And I've always done that. And there's the box on the bench, and mm-hmm. nobody's allowed into it other than the players and staff. And I always respect that. There are a couple of photographers around the league that seem to think they have their own set of rules, and they're in there all the time, which that really bothers me. And I've called them out on it several times, if the officials don't, because they know they're not supposed to be in there. I go to all the Red Blacks practices and talk to all these guys, and mm-hmm. they talk to me, I know, about injuries before they don't even tell the team if they've got a, you know, some minor injury, because they want to keep playing. They gripe about not starting, and they it, because they know that it's not going anywhere. I'm almost like a father figure. I'm old yeah. enough to, you know, and it's
a sideline bartender,
basically. Yes. And they trust that whatever they tell me, is not going anywhere. And these are guys that I might talk to once or twice, and and that's it. And all of a sudden, you know, we're pals, and we're talking about different things, and they're grumbling about the coaches and all this, and I'm giving my feedback on what I'm seeing with other guys that are other covering it. And you're saying, you know, this guy can't cover. He can't cover deep. I don't know why he's starting. And I've told coaches the same thing. I've said to them, I said, you know, you've got guys out here that just can't, that aren't covering. They can't cover deep. Or you got a quarterback that only looks one way.
It's interesting what you see through the eyes of your lens. That's cool. And so I got to ask you, how many images do you have collected over the years? Because, you know, our game's in crisis and some people are worried that we could be losing our game. I think it's cool that you have all this history and all these images. How many images do you have collected between you and your father?
Right now, online, there's 43,500.
Wow.
Images going from 1959. I do stuff off the field as well with some of the players.
Hey, but Scott, let me ask you, do you have some of the old school guys from the 70s, 80s, maybe even the 60s give you a call and say, hey, could I see some of your stuff? Just some, you know, for nostalgic reasons for them too.
Oh, I get it regularly. And it's funny with some of the guys because, especially in the 70s, I was the same age as these guys, and I wasn't really, like, because I'm rather unassuming, and I stay back, and I shoot the way I shoot, I didn't talk to any of them. Again, it goes back to, you know, respecting that boundary. And then I run into these guys, or I get a call, and we talk for, you know, we'll end up talking for an hour, and they're going, yes, they all knew who I was. I had no idea that they did. Some of the guys are looking at the pictures with maybe a couple more players. They'll sit down together, and they'll go through them, and they'll look at them, and they'll look at all the pictures from a certain, you know, that year that they played or the years they played. And because of concussions and you know, sadly, some of the guys with, you know, early dementia, they were saying how much they appreciated the pictures because it helped them rebuild all the memories that they lost or that they were losing. So some of the guys buy the pictures and you know, which is, for me, when I hear that, it really puts the context of how incredibly important the pictures are.
Hey, Scott, is there a favorite player that you love to shoot over your time? Was there one guy or one team? I know you were with the Red Blacks and Rough Riders, but was there maybe one guy from another team you really enjoyed watching him play and you got some really good photos?
Doug Flutie.
Yeah. That's any. How hard was he to shoot, though? There was a guy that played playground football. He was go to the red truck and run a button hook. Like, you really would have to anticipate to know what Doug Flutie was going to do.
Yeah, I just, you know, I absolutely loved watching him play. I you know, as playing, like when I said I was playing flag and senior, I played quarterback, and I kind of, you know, sort of looked at how Flutie played and his scrambling and his just, and everything about him was just how, what I enjoyed about watching football. He was exciting all the time. And I like the other one, Warren Moon, and there's a lot of other guys too, you know, that were, you know, those kind of guys. And then, you know, even guys like Zambiazzi and
Hamilton, those
and,
kind of guys.
You know, and you mentioned, and Vince Goldsmith, he was one I liked because he wasn't a really big guy, but I always figured he was one of the first real rush ends in the league.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
He was one of those guys. He didn't have the size, but he had the speed. And
James Quick Parker was another good one too.
And
back
he's
in the
another
day.
He's another one. I don't collect autographs. I'm not a.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I don't do. I have a few, and James Parker was one of them, and Mervin Fernandez. But because it goes to respecting the boundaries.
Was there any stadium that you did or did not like shooting at? Maybe give me one outside of Ottawa that you love shooting at. Was there one where you'd go on the road and shoot that you liked?
Actually, I have to say Taylor Field.
You liked it or didn't like it?
I did like it.
What did you like about it? What did you like about it?
I was there for, when I was the Red Blacks team photographer.
Yeah.
I traveled with them on the charter for their very first franchise preseason game, mm-hmm. and it was in Saskatchewan.
Right.
So, and that was the first time I'd shot in Taylor Field, shot football there anyways. And it just reminded me of old Lansdowne Park.
Yeah.
It reminded me that just the way it was. It was run down. And, but,
character. You know, character.
And that's exactly what it was that, you know, the dressing rooms, just everything about it was, you know, it was...
It was a beautiful dump is what it was.
Yeah, it said football to me.
Yeah, no, for
and it
sure.
Wasn't, and there wasn't a big crowd. It was preseason. Mm-hmm. But it was the fans that were there, I mean, they're crazy. I could say that they're the best in the league, but I'd be lying. It's Ottawa, obviously.
Thanks to Scott for joining me, and you can check out his fine work at Scott Grant Photography on Facebook. We'll have more of Countdown to Kickoff, Western Final Edition, here on the Rough Riders Radio Network.
Saskatchewan's source for Canada's team. Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Bronc Beer and Bronc Light, a great Buckin' beer brewed in the West and now available in Saskatchewan. And by Farm Boy Realty. Put a farm boy to work for you selling Southeast Saskatchewan farmland. FarmBoyRealty.com. The source, 620 CKRM.
Getting set for the Rough Riders and Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Ballsy back in studio at the corner of 12th and Rose in the snowy championship Sunday with Mike McCullough and Wes Cates. It's +3 in Toronto, where the Argonauts and Chris Jones are shutting down Masoli and Evans and the Tiger Cats 12-0. Big play at the end of the half. Toronto picks it off. It looks like they're running in for a pick six, but Dane Evans and the Tiger Cats force a fumble. Evans comes up with the ball after throwing the interception, so it remains 12-0 at halftime at BMO Field, where it is a balmy +3. Guys, Michael, start with you. Masoli started, Evans comes in. You thought it was premature to pull him after the first quarter.
Yeah, it's only a quarter, and you're talking about the guy who was the MOP last year. I understand you got to kind of make assessments on the fly, but let's give him some time here, guys. Like, I'm not a big fan, because I think then you go back to Masoli, and Evans hasn't done anything the whole second quarter.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, to me, it doesn't send a good message to the team.
What's the rule when there's an interception and a pick six? Because the quarterback was left unaccounted for there.
Yeah, Etcheverry always told us, just get the quarterback and the intended receiver, because three-quarters of the time or more, those are the two guys that will make the tackle on the interceptor. So, and if you watch it, it actually is quite accurate. Most of the times, it is the quarterback or the receiver that was intended for that ends up making the play to tackle him. So,
Wes, have you ever tracked, off the top of your head, can you remember tracking somebody down on a pick six or an interception situation like that where they left you unblocked?
No, a fumble, though.
Okay.
It was like, and that was the last person. I remember I got like
bruised. Did you fumble?
I got bruised. No, it wasn't my fumble. Okay. I can't remember who fumbled it, but it was in Edmonton. I can't remember the D lineman's name, big dude. And he was running, and I was like basically right in behind him. And I'm just, you know, striding up behind him, like, how the hell am I going to get this dude down? Just threw my arms around the legs, took a shot to the ribs, was sore for, like, I'm like one tackle, and I'm like more sore than a whole
Once
game,
again,
like
he's saying
carries.
How tough it is to play defense. Yeah. You hear this?
Yeah,
I like this.
Okay, so here's the one
Every
thing.
Running back is 300 pounds.
So here's the one thing as we talk about this game, and then we'll let it go. But I never got a chance to comment on this. Obviously, haven't asked you dudes. So the Elks had an outbreak earlier in the year and had to play 3 games in 7 days to wrap up the season. Brandon Banks asked to go to a Raptors game. He wasn't allowed to go to a Raptors game. A couple other guys were suspended, including Jagera Davis, by his team for violating protocol. How the hell do the Argos, ownership, management, Mike Pinball, everybody, not know the rules, number one, okay? To allow Jeremiah or to allow McLeod Bethel Thompson and three other teammates to go to the game, which, by the way, I have no problem with, because it's apparently vaccinated guys going to a fully vaccinated stadium. But how don't they know the rules, number one? And number two, the CFL just makes up rules. Like, okay, they should have to sit out for 4 days. McLeod Bethel Thompson shouldn't have to play. He shouldn't be allowed to play in this game. But now we make up the rules. Like, that's what I've hated about this whole COVID thing right from day one. Yeah. In life, in sports, it's the pick and choose rules. Even LeBron, he got out of his thing right away, boom, because he was tweeting conspiracy tweets right away, and now all of a sudden Adam Silver doesn't want some of his star players or anybody to get upset. So just your thoughts, Wes, on that, because that's a real head scratcher from the CFL.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think the management did know. I just thought they were thinking it was going to fly under the radar and they'd be able to sell some more tickets. They're looking at the bottom line and like, oh, let's get some of our stars over to the game, try to sell, you know what I mean, bring some people out. It's no big deal. Like you said, everybody's vaccinated. It shouldn't be. And then they're like, oh, what? Wait. Like, hold on, let me see the rule book.
Yeah.
Oh, that is in there. Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah, now we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And they thought it was the Argos. Nobody paid attention anyway.
Right.
And it's the biggest, it was one of the biggest stories in Toronto for a couple of days, I guess. So the Argos did make front page. Mike, just if you were on that Argos football team and McLeod Bethel Thompson wasn't able to play today, what would you have done? Because you were a guy that stood up. You didn't care what anybody said.
Well, by now I would have already been cut. That's okay.
Yeah.
But if I was on that team, and you know, I'm thinking back when we were playing in 9, 10, 13 with doubles, if they somehow screwed doubles over, I would do my best to organize a sit-out. I would say, we're not playing the game. Like, it's because it's one thing if you just blatantly flaunt the rules, which the rule, these rules in particular, in my opinion, are stupid. But anyways, they're the rules. But the team encourages you to go. The same team that owns the Raptors owns you and therefore is part of the league, encourages you to go to promote the game. So you think, oh, I'm good. Okay, the team told me. And then you get slapped with this ridiculousness going on. So I'm glad he's playing. I'm glad they came to their senses. But it is stupid. The ownership screwed up. But yeah, if I was on the team, I would try to organize it with all the players, say, guys, we got to say we're not playing. And it's a scary, dangerous thing to do, but it's, it, to me, it would have been the right thing to
well,
do.
Well, and I agree with you. I'm glad he's playing.
Me too.
I think it, he
me
was
too.
A vaccinated guy that went because his boss told him to go, and he went to a vaccinated stadium.
Right.
So what are we doing here? But also, what are we doing here making up rules? Like, we're just making up rules on the fly. Another CFL development. Your guys' thoughts on this? Apparently, Farhan Lalji, who is a contributor to the Sports Cage on a weekly basis from TSN, reporting that the Elks have reached out to Calgary to see if Dave Dickinson is interested in their coaching position. Do you think Dave would have an interest in leaving Calgary to do that? Kind of leave the nest and do his own thing away from Huffnagel and everything like that?
I feel like Dave's tied to that Calgary organization a little bit, but hey, money talks. You know what I mean? So maybe, and Edmonton is the more storied franchise, maybe not of late, but you know, they've got the better history. So it just depends. A little cooler weather, a little more money, and a little better history, maybe.
Yeah. I guess maybe, Mike, if he gets the GM caveat.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, because isn't there something in the rules that state that a team or a coach can't apply or interview for a job that's a lateral move?
Yeah.
That's going to be up. So if they're approaching him, I would assume it's because the GM head coach or just GM.
I wonder if he has interest in being a GM, because some guys just like being coaches.
You're
like
right.
Mark Trestman has no desire to be a GM. He wants to just be a coach.
But I mean, Dickie's been doing it for, what, a decade? He might want to try something just to, you know, guys like a challenge. And so if it's the GM job, I could see him taking it, but who knows what's going on? Because he's probably next in line for Huffnagel if that's what he wanted. But how long is Huffnagel going to be there? He could be there another 15 years. Who knows?
So we're breaking down this game between the Bombers and the Riders. That's the one we care about. The Riders, we've given the edge to Winnipeg and quarterback slightly, although the weather kind of makes it almost a push with Cody's legs. Running back, slight edge to Winnipeg because of the O-line, which is a decisive edge. Let's go D-line. Wes, how do you see the defensive lines matching up in this game? Keeping in mind that A.C. Leonard has somewhat of a wonky hip.
Is he going to play?
They say he's going to play, yeah.
Yeah, if you play, I mean, that's a tough one. I feel like I'm going to pull a professor, a Don Hewitt here and give it a wash on this one. You know what I mean? I think both.
Can't wash
both,
it.
Can't wash it.
No, you can wash it. You can wash it.
Because they both have two good bookends, you know what I mean? And they're solid in the middle on both, you know what I mean, both teams. And I guess it just comes down to which. Can we put it back on the O-line and say that Winnipeg's is going to be better?
Not far off,
a least
right?
A less stout O-line to go up against.
Yeah, so how about you, Mike?
The DNs are pretty equal, I think, you know, especially after the year that Woodard and Leonard had. I'm going to give it the edge to the Riders because of their interior. Like,
nice.
Micah Johnson's just the guy's a freak. He's an absolute animal.
He could be in a game like this where it's bully ball. Huge. This could be a huge game.
He could take up that whole middle. He's like an Aaron Donald of the CFL type thing. Yeah. So I'm going to give the edge to the Riders in this. Just a slight edge to the Riders.
So how does footing affect in the trenches? I know it affects receivers and in space. How does it affect, who is the advantage footage wise generally?
I think the O-line would probably, you know.
Just because you know where you're going?
You know where you're going. But once again, like I said, these fields are pretty good. Now, I don't think there's really too much of an advantage footing-wise because the cleats they have now and the turf, even if it's minus 25, it's still pretty soft. It's quite surprising, actually. If you haven't been on it when it's cold, you'd be quite surprised at how soft it still is. So.
Okay. And then in terms of the linebackers, let's go to the linebacking court. We'll start with you, Mike, because that's your bread and butter. Who are you going with the linebackers? Keeping in mind, Micah Tights is not in here. And I know it's funny. Mm-hmm. About 2 years ago, we'd go, Micah Tights, big deal. But this guy's been a revelation this year. Not only on special teams, but also in the linebacking core. Had his foot stepped on. He won't play. How big a deal is that for
I think without players? Micah Tights, you go Winnipeg for sure, because I'm a huge Big Hill fan. He's phenomenal. Even at his age, he's still doing what he does. And even with Tights in there, you might give a slight edge to Winnipeg just because of Biggie. But now with Tights out for sure, I think Winnipeg's got the advantage.
How about you, Wes?
Yeah, I'm with Mike on this one. It's interesting to see that they've got Buka sliding into the starting position for the Riders. So he obviously is a smart kid that understands football, understands the whole field, and maybe he makes some plays. Maybe the Riders linebackers make more play, but just flat out looking at it before the game starts, you got to go Winnipeg.
But sorry, don't be surprised if that's just in there right now as
and,
is.
And Purifoy moves down?
Purifoy, or if they even do some sort of change and maybe for the Raiders, because they have enough right now. They don't need Buka in there. So I feel like we might not see Buka in there. Not to say that we shouldn't, but I feel like that's just kind of like the roster they put
in that spot.
Here's a question I have quickly for you guys as it relates to D and O line. Mike, why do we dress way more D linemen than O linemen?
I don't know. I mean, I'm as a defender, I always, you know, it's nice, but at the same time, it never made much sense to me because then you say, oh, we have six O linemen. One guy, we've had games where two guys have gone down or one's gimped up, and they're like, oh, the seventh O line will be a D lineman converted. Like, Schultze was our seventh O lineman many a times.
But, right.
And I love Schultze, but he's no O lineman. I'm sorry, but like, O line's huge. If you lose two guys, you only have a four-man O-line with a sub. I don't understand to have eight or nine D-linemen and six O-linemen, especially in a game like this, of this magnitude, in this weather. I don't get it.
How about you, Wes?
D-line does tend to rotate more, you know what I mean? So there's going to be more guys in and out on the D-line. Offensive line usually doesn't rotate. Maybe you do some big packages where you bring in a six O-lineman or something like that. But you should still at least have a couple of guys, you know what I mean? Because two O-linemen going down in a game is not that
I'd like to see seven and seven. Now, if you have seven D linemen, you're still getting a seven-man rotation. That's tons.
That should be okay.
Tons of breathing room.
You're talking like a lean linebacker. You're not carrying.
Well,
around
yeah,
a
but
bunch
at the same time,
weight.
Like linebackers and DBs and running backs are not even running backs. You're in the whole game.
Yeah.
Like D linemen, like sometimes they're only in for 50%.
Let's go secondary. Who do you give the edge to in the secondary as you're looking at it right now? Alexander's a stud safety.
I'm gonna go Riders.
Rose is a nice addition for them in the secondary.
I like Webb and Clark have been kind of revelations, you know, and Purifoy, awesome. Gainey, very good. And Marshall, like everybody's been saying, when he's on, he's on. When he's a little off, he's average or above average. So I got to give it to the Riders, I think.
How about you, Wes?
Yeah, I'm rolling with the Riders. I just think they're a savvy bunch. They just find ways, tip drills, you know what I mean, force fumbles. They just find ways to make plays impact the game.
I feel like this defense is going to turn over Kolaros a couple of times. That's what I feel.
Yeah. The question is Cody going to protect the ball?
Well, he cannot have a four interception game and have them win the game.
The thing is with Winnipeg's defense is they're on record setting pace at one point.
Yeah.
But they weren't needed to win games. The Riders defense has won games, many games. Like they are, if the defense plays average today, we don't win.
No.
It just doesn't happen.
No.
The Winnipeg defense could play average and still win.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. We're going to get to specials, get to the coaching breakdown too in this game. Speaking of specials, time for our profiles feature.
The countdown to kickoff continues on The Source 620 CKRM. You've seen them on the field. Now we dig deep to bring you a closer look at a Riders player with info you'll never find on the stat sheet. This is Profiles for Borderland Co-op. You're at home here. Visit them in Moosomin or Whitewood right on the number one highway and online at borderlandcoop.com.
All right, time to head out to the Mr. Lube hotline and speak with our man in the profiles feature. That would be Jamal Morrow, running back and return man for your Saskatchewan Roughriders. Boy, man, I love the way you've brought some stability and a little bit of flash to the return game. How are you feeling out there?
I'm good. First of all, thanks for having me, but I'm feeling amazing, man. It's just You know, after being, you know, on the practice roster for a year, just to finally have an opportunity to go out and play, you know, just to kind of take advantage of those opportunities, man. And it's just been a blast going out there and playing ball again.
Okay, I got to ask you, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you after the initial question. Have you always been a patient guy? Because it takes a lot of patience if you're a young, aggressive athlete that you need to be to play football to be that patient. It's like a wild stallion that can't get out of the corral, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been patience. I mean, at the end of the day, I know, like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I just say when it comes to it, you got to take advantage of the opportunity. So, definitely, I mean, and it helps having guys like Marcus Stig, Penn, and Willie P, like, in front of me, because, like, I mean, I learned so much just from them, just watching them, and I wasn't even worried about playing. It was just like, I just took it as the opportunity as to be a sponge and soak in everything that they talk to me and tell me about, and just whenever I get my opportunity, use what they tell me and, you know, go from there.
Mm-hmm. Who did you look up to growing up, either in your personal life or as a coach or a player or something like that?
I mean, obviously my biggest are, I definitely had coaches, but like in terms of playing style, I looked up to Chris Johnson. I loved the way Chris Johnson was my favorite running back.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way he played with the Titans was just amazing. So I just kind of, I mean, I'm not as fast as him, but I just liked the way his running style was, and just so, you know, watch him. And also, like, LaDainian Thomas, and growing up in that San Diego area, having, you know, my first NFL game was a Charger game. So being able to watch him live and, you know, in person was just was surreal, and, you know, definitely took some things from his game as well.
Dude, I knew I liked you for a reason. The Chargers are my favorite team. I still call them the San Diego Chargers. Like, I was a...
Oh, so...
I was
you're having a good time there so far this season.
Yeah, isn't that just... You know, I don't think Justin Herbert is that far behind Patrick Mahomes, except for their resumes. Like, he looks like a stud.
Yeah, he's a stud, and that's actually funny. Like, when I was in college, his first game actually playing was against us at Washington State.
Wow.
They threw him in. So, yeah, his first game actually was against us. So that was, like, super cool to see his progression from that, too.
Yeah, so were you sad when the Chargers left San Diego, buddy?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not even a Chargers fan, but, like, just the whole city of San Diego, like, to lose a team like that for, like, the reasons it did is definitely, like, was gut-wrenching, especially to, like, the diehard Charger fans out there. I mean, it's still in L.A., but it's definitely not the same. It didn't need to go back to San Diego.
So you called me when you said you'd call me. You're bubbly, you're well-spoken, you got patience. Where did you get all these attributes from? Like, did you look up to a mom or a dad or somebody that raised you?
I mean, take it up to my, you know, my parents, my mom, and my dad. I mean, and my dad really taught me. He doesn't talk that much, but, like, when he does, you listen, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had background in the Navy, so it kind of just taught me just, you know, patience and order, and, you know, when it's your time, you always take advantage of, you know, your opportunities, because, you know, you never know if it's going to be your last one or, you know, kind of like that. And so, yeah, really it's come from my parents. I mean, they told me, like, hey, always take the time when you do things and never rush. And if it's meant to happen, it's meant to happen.
You know, I love how you catch the ball on the field, because catching a punt is probably... In the CFL, it's not as dangerous as the NFL because they don't have to, or American college, because they don't have to give you much room. You get the 5-yard rule here.
Absolutely, yeah.
But when you catch the ball, I love how you go north and south right away. You don't dance around too much. You just make up your mind. What's going through your mind when you're catching a punt?
I mean, first is catch the ball first.
Yeah.
That's number one. Make sure we're secure. But I kind of just... Everything, like, when the ball's in the air, it's kind of like a movie when, like, everything is going slow motion. I'm just focused on, like, the ball. Mm-hmm. And then, like, soon as, like, you catch it, everything is, like, toops. Everything's back to fast motion again, you know? So mm-hmm. It's kind of, like, changing that gear, and it's like, all right, you get the ball, now go. And so it's like, because you're waiting on the ball for so long, it's like, patience, patience, patience. Now it's like, all right, let's get out of there, you know? So... Really, just yeah. I mean, I just know, like, the best way to get to the end zone is going north and south. So,
yeah.
Watching return, and so I've just been studying film just on, like, the returners and this and the CFL, and kind of taking from their game and adding it to mine. I personally do enjoy it because, you know, it's just a faster paced game. You know, the games go by faster, the possessions are faster. So, you know, it's always just moving. So I definitely enjoy that aspect of the game. And I mean, it's football. You know, once you get all the way out the motions and all that stuff, and then it's still football. You know, you got to line up and, you know, just play ball like you've been doing your whole life. But I definitely do enjoy the CFL game for sure.
And lastly, when football's done, long time down the road, what do you want to do outside of football or after your playing days?
I'm starting it right now. I have in love with real estate.
Okay.
Like this past quarantine, I've literally just been sitting there watching like all types of house shows and on HGTV and all that stuff, and just watching it. And I've actually found like a huge passion for it. So I'm actually right now currently working on getting my real estate license right now, and in the off season to start doing that. But I mean, besides that, I mean, I love. Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's within something within real estate, or if an opportunity comes within college coaching, I would love to do that as well.
Well, we hope that's a few years down the road and you get in and have more of a starring role. But, man, you've really turned around the return game, so we're happy for that. Thanks for this, Jamal.
Awesome, yeah. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
There is a proud history of football in this province and a bright future. As we continue our countdown to kickoff, let's take a look at the grassroots of the sport here in Saskatchewan. Time for Growing the Game. Brought to you by Zipperlock Building Company and Powerlift Doors. See them in Raymore or call 888-692-5515.
All right, as the Argonauts lead Hamilton 12-0 in the third quarters, they're starting there at BMO Field, the East Final, getting ready for the West Final. Now, yesterday, the Vanier Cup was played, the 56th Vanier Cup, and the U of S Huskies lose to Western 27-21. Too bad. We had four Reginans on that team. Scott Flory, Riker Frank, Mason Nias, and Paul Waldo was a coach on that team. Mike, but the funny thing is you're a former university sports player. You didn't even know the game was on.
I thought about it last night, probably around 10 o'clock. I'm like, when's the Vanier? Because you don't see or hear anything about it. And then this morning I'm watching SportsCenter, and right before it ends at 8:58, like, and the Vanier is played today. Yeah. And they show three clips in 15 seconds and you're done. I'm like, if I went for a pee break, I wouldn't even know.
It was sad. And the production of the game was awful. CBC, that's the one game you get the broadcast. Mark Lee didn't do a bad job, but they have the camera angles were terrible. The public address and the music was way too loud, drowning out the announcers. Can we not put an effort into this thing? Yeah. And then I turn on, and then Wes, then I turn on Alabama and Georgia.
I knew
and,
that game was on.
Well, I knew that game was on. And I mean, I know it's apples and oranges, but unbelievable, the production, everything like that. But Alabama again?
I know. I was really hoping that Georgia won just to kick Alabama out of it and get somebody new in the playoffs, but whatever.
Yeah.
What's up with it? How come the Vanier isn't the day before the Grey Cup anymore?
They had it in 11 and 12. They had the biggest crowd they ever had those 2 years, but then U Sports decided they wanted to break away from the CFL. And as Zinger, our producer, said here in-house, they should have a Friday night Canadian Bowl, the junior game. They should have the Saturday Vanier Cup and then Sunday the Grey Cup and make it a Canada football weekend.
That really seems way too logical.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah,
there's no logic in society.
Common sense isn't very common.
No.
Okay, so I'm getting a chance here to squeeze in another feature here in the Growing the Game spot. All right, I'm trying to squeeze this guy into the pregame show here because he brings great insight. Former athletic therapist with your Saskatchewan Rough Riders, has helped out a number of just everyday people but athletes in this town, including my son, at Courtside Sports Medicine and Rehab. It's Dale Petura. But first off, you're fencing today in Montreal in the Masters Division. How long have you been fencing for?
I've been fencing since I was 50. So when I was 50, my son gave me fencing lessons for my birthday. And I've been doing it ever since.
Awesome, man. And I won't ask you how long that was, because then we'll know how old you are. And I'm not doing that. And we don't just protect ladies' ages here. We protect gentlemen's ages, too. And I say that as a guy who's getting older. Dale, now you don't know the exact injuries, but I thought you could talk to us about some of these injury scenarios for the Riders. First off, Micah Tight's not playing because somebody stepped on his foot. Now, you'd say, well, I stepped on his foot. But I mean, that could be a serious injury.
Yeah, yes, it could be for sure. The foot is, well, obviously the foot holds us up all the time. And when you're walking, your lower extremities put about your body weight through your joints. When you run, that's 5 to 7 times. So your foot holds everything up, the middle arch of your foot. is kind of the keystone to your foot and to keeping you upright. And so if you get stepped right on the top, and that kind of crushes that down a bit, or wherever you get stepped on the foot, it certainly could limit you drastically.
Next injury. Duke Williams has a turf toe. I remember watching a Chargers game back in the day, AFC Championship game. The great tight end Antonio Gates was basically rendered to a mall walker. That's how bad the turf toe was. Just talk about that injury and how you can combat that in this game.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's combated that a lot is the new turfs and stuff. Back in the day when we had the old AstroTurf and the old OmniTurf, I guess is what it was called.
Right.
There was lots of turf toe. Typically what happens there is you plant to turn or you plant to make a cut and your foot just keeps sliding forward into your shoe and then you kind of bang your shoe or your toe against the end of your shoe and into the turf and it sprains the large joint right at your toe. So it's a very difficult injury because every time you run, you push off your toe. So if you're running, making cuts and stuff and always pushing off that, it's going to be very sore. Some of the things that they do just to try and lessen that discomfort is obviously you can tape it so that you don't get so much movement at that toe. And then the other thing they often do is they put what's called a spring steel insole into the shoe. So it's just a little skinny piece of steel on top of a insert, and it just, again, prevents you from putting so much bend or flexion through that toe.
Maybe the biggest injury is AC Leonard. It's a hip, it's a back. I think they're all connected. But specifically with a hip injury, what could, without knowing what the injury is, what could he be dealing with there, and how could you treat something like that? Because that seems like kind of a wonky injury to a guy like me.
I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said that. You know, it could be hip, could be back, could be SI joint. Could be any one of those or a combination of them all. If you're dealing strictly with the hip joint itself, or the hip region, it all depends kind of whether it's muscular or more inside the joint. These days there's lots of, what they call labral tears in the joint that are just irritating, when you run, when you bend. When you flex that hip up quite a bit, you catch it. It's almost, you could almost think about it like a meniscus in the knee. There's a little, now I have no idea if that's what he's got, but that's one of the things that happens around the hip. You can get lots of just muscular injuries around the hip. There's lots of muscle around there. There's your big glute muscle, which is your hip extensor. In the front, there's all the hip flexors. There's a small little muscle that it's called the tensor fascia latus. So there's tons of muscular injuries that you could get. And the thing about them is they can be persistent, but you can still be relatively active. And because there's so many muscles around the hip that kind of can compensate one for another.
Okay, so last question for you here before we wish you well in your fencing exploits here. In hot weather, you have some sort of, you can get pulls and cramps and that type of thing. Can you get in really cold weather? Because what I find when I played, when I coached, guys forget to hydrate in cold weather. Is that a factor in a game like this?
Yeah, I think you're right there for sure, because one of the things in cold weather, what do is you maybe clothing up a little bit more. You maybe put on an extra shirt underneath, or you put on a long sleever instead of a short sleever. When you're out running and moving about, you're doing the same. You're still building up heat. You're still sweating. You're still exerting yourself, and so you're still getting rid of the fluid. So, but you don't feel like, you don't feel hot and sweaty big time when you walk off the field, so you don't run to the water bottle right away. But it is truly important to do that. You're a little stiff as you know when you're colder, but as you get moving, you definitely need to keep hydrating. The other one little thing about when you're getting into the cold weather and stuff, and you often, run to the heater to get a little bit of warmth, but you just got to watch that a little bit, because if you start to sweat too much out in the cold, then you can run into other problems for sure.
Well, Dale, good luck fencing, and please let me know how you do so I can mention it on the post-game show, okay, my friend?
I will. Thank you.
Welcome to the Manny Show with Manny Arsenault. He knows a thing or two about finding the end zone. So who will be today's breakout player? The Manny Show is brought to you by Capital Ford, proud vehicle provider of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We drive Rider Nation.
All right, on Championship Sunday, we're talking to a championship dude, Manny Arsenault, the Manny Show Western Final Edition. You know what I like about you, Manny, is your positivity, your wisdom and your positivity. Those would be two words, getting to know you, that I'd use to describe you. Shaq Evans needs some positivity in his life. He, you know, one catch for minus 4 yards in the last game, two catches for 3 yards. We talked about last week being negative and that influencing your game. What did you see from Shaq in the last game? And I feel like he's too good to not have a big game in the playoffs here.
Man, you know what the biggest thing is, man, to whom much is given, you know, much is like, you know, they say, what the little scriptures say, it says something about, like, to whom much is given, much is expected, and all this, how it goes.
Yeah.
The expectation for Shaq is very high from fans that's watching. You know what? NFL guy, big-time college university, we expect these amount of plays. But what they have to understand is Shaq don't determine when the ball come his way. So for him, it's not about being the best guy on a team. It's being the best guy for the team. And if that means I'm backside, if I'm a decoy, I have to block, I have to accept my role. And when those big plays come, I'm going to make it. But that's the thing with Shaq. Just let the plays come to you. You know he's an emotional guy. That's what people judge him off of, all his antics. But he has to learn that, hey, I'm just a piece to the puzzle. And I'm a guy that has a role on this team.
Yeah, okay. So, and there were a couple of plays, passes thrown him, and him and Cody look out of sync. Cody almost looks like he's trying to force him the ball sometimes. There was a slant route, which he's very good at, and he kind of got redirected by Leonard of the Stampeders, and the ball was picked off by Moxie. So I don't know that I'd blame him on that one. And I don't know if I can blame him on the other one, although fans were on him after the game in the call-in show. They thought he should have came back to the football on the one that was kind of thrown up for him. I don't know if you saw, but what did you see there if you did?
Man, you know what? You got to look at it like this here. Body language says a lot. Quarterback's not going to throw a perfect ball. Quarterbacks want to get you involved. So if I can hit you with the quick game, being Cody, that's what I'm going to try to do. But it's like this here, man. Hey, take the feelings out of it. Take the emotions out of it. You got to go out there and play. If he don't get any catches, but we win the game, it's okay. If he get one catch, we win the game. It's okay. Big picture is winning the football game, staying on the field, positive body language. And you got to find ways to stay engaged. And that's the whole thing with this whole Shaq Evans is, as an OC, as the quarterback, as the head coach, get over it, move forward. You don't want to fix the body language, all your antics, put somebody else in who will. In-house competition to get the best out of a player. To get that push.
Well, I will say he does get excited when somebody else on his team scores a touchdown. He shows leadership there because he did it with Kean Schaefer-Baker.
Oh, yeah.
So he did it with Kean Schaefer-Baker. That's good. Let's move on to a guy they brought in, Duke Williams, who is suffering from a turf toe. Has Manny Arsenault ever had a turf toe? And what is he dealing with today, Duke Williams?
Man, you know what? I never had a turf toe, but Nick Moore had it before. I think Burnham had a small case. And they told me that crap sucks. And you could try to put a little metal plate where your foot don't bend as much to try to treat it. But I hear it's nagging. It can last a very long time. So you kind of got one option, numb it a little bit and play, or go out there, accept the pain, feel that you can't hurt it, but it can hurt you. And you win away from the big show.
When it's your time to shine, you got to shine. When opportunity knocks, be ready to walk through the door. I think Paul McRoberts has done that. The Labor Day game, he had four catches, didn't see the field till this last game where he had two nice catches and made a big special teams tackle that Coach Dickey recognized too, I saw on the sideline. So Paul McRoberts is doing the little things he needs to do, and you'll have to do that again today.
Oh, exactly, man. You look, Look. The small details, man, go a long way. Reps build confidence, and that's what that guy's building. It don't have to be an 80-yard bomb or one-hand catch. Hey, you know what? Positive plays, move the chains. And my motto for my receiver room is first downs and touchdowns. That'll help you win.
Yeah. So, lastly, we're playing in a cold weather game here, Manny. This is physical. This is physical, but it's also mental. You talk about kids from the southern states, from California. They don't like the cold weather. You know, just talk about. Is it tough to throw the ball to catch the ball in a game like this, or is it mind over matter?
Man, mind over matter. But this one here, you got to take the elements out the equation. Because if cold is a factor, like Wally used to say, you are already defeated. And that's what he used to look at, the body language of the boys in pregame. Who's not looking to go out there and warm up part of their regular routine? But you got to think, if it's cold, everybody's cold. Positive plays, man, take the crowd out of it. That's another factor you're dealing with. Cold weather, noisy fans, nobody like it. But you got to go out there and impose your will. When it get cold, it's like playing in the rain. Got to hit your opponent in the mouth. And that's what it is. Bully ball is played when the leaves start to change colors. That finesse game goes out the window.
Do the Riders have enough bully ball in them to beat a veteran, bigger Winnipeg team?
Man, you know what, man? With this being a rivalry game and how they play, I think it can go down to the wire. These two teams match up quite well. So we're going to see who come to play up front. And that's going to determine how the game go. And the game will be won in the trenches. Watch.
That's Manny Arsenault joining us. Guys, quick comment from you. Now, Luke sends me a text. He says, Duke Williams is not warming up, but neither is his possible replacement, Rashard Davis. So I don't know what we can draw from that. Do you think you're just keeping Duke off his feet till the game?
Or they might just be cold. And guys, like, I'm not doing my usual warm-up. Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, a lot of guys possibly say, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Guys will warm up in the hallway and stuff sometimes.
Depending on what's going on with him, he's probably doing everything in the locker room. Yeah. Like Mike was just saying, because it's warmer in there. And then, you know, if you have an injury, if you go to try to get warmed up in the cold, you might actually aggravate it.
So is the Duke Williams injury as big a deal here in this game as it would be on a normal track?
What do you think, Casey?
I think, because you still got to throw the ball. You know, it's not like both teams are just going to run the whole time. And Duke seems to be your guy that, like, takes the stress off of the rest of the receivers and makes big plays when you need. Like, he's the outside of, you know, one here and there from Linnaeus. And Schaefer Baker seems to be a guy you can count on. Duke was that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
bigger body.
Maybe it won't be as big a factor if we were in nicer weather. But, you know, just think of those nasty kind of offensive series where it's only like an 8-yard pass, but you're in a group of guys. You know, that's where we could use Duke to just kind of snag balls, whether it's out of the air or in a group of defenders. So it will hurt them.
Oh, by the way, the Hamilton Tiger Cats have scored a touchdown on a punt return and now a passing touchdown. They're leading the Toronto Argonauts in the East Final.
No, they're not. It's tied because I think they missed that extra point.
They missed the other?
Yes.
They missed two extra
points. Well, listen, I just couldn't look past Casey's huge melon. All I saw was I think it was a fumble or something and Toronto was celebrating. So it's now 12-12.
This dude has got more hats than lids. He's got now his Washington football team hat. That's outstanding. You are fresh, man. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Luke Molitor, John Ryan, get some closing thoughts from these dudes. This is Countdown to Kickoff on the Rough Riders Radio Network.
It's time for Mullinder's Matchup with Luke Mullinder. Brought to you by Nelson Motors and Equipment, your John Deere dealer in Avonlea, Radville, Estevan, Redvers, and Oxbow. Visit NelsonMotors.com.
Time to head out on the Mr. Lube hotline. And Mr. Lube, you can get warranty approved, top to bottom maintenance at any of their four Mr. Lube Regina locations. This dude is joining us from the winter wonderland that is known as Winnipeg, Manitoba, where I think the weather's as bad as it is there as it is here. And Luke, it's time for your matchup. Does weather factor in, my friend?
Well, I haven't been outside yet. I've just done a bunch of looking out the window, and it does look bad. To be honest with you, it reminds me of the 2010 West Final when we went to Calgary. The weather was definitely cold, but what people got to remember is that, hey, they've got to play in this too, right? And we've been in this situation before as an organization, like that 2010 game in Calgary, right? We weren't getting very many people. I don't think they were on our side. I think that we went in there and we did what we needed to do and beat a very good Calgary team. So there's no reason why the Saskatchewan Roughriders can't pull this one out today, but it is going to take a lot of things to go right, and hopefully a couple things to go wrong on Winnipeg side.
Well, Rob Vanstone, who does our halftime show, Leader Post Writer, pointed it out earlier this week in his great column that when the Riders have either won a Grey Cup or been to a Grey Cup in the last little while, it's generally been, you know, you had adversity, you had to work through adversity, you had to go through mm-hmm. one of these games, even when you played. So it is definitely something that the Riders have been accustomed to on their playoff runs. Now, if they're to win today against the juggernaut team, mm-hmm. what do they got to do?
Yeah, so, there's a lot of things that I've been thinking of overall for this matchup and for the game. But I'll tell you the one thing that sticks out. The Saskatchewan Roughriders cannot turn the ball over today at all.
Yeah,
they cannot turn, and I don't mean just interceptions. I mean fumble recovery. I mean fumbles. I mean third down, third and short plays. The Riders cannot turn the ball over today. I think they've got a chance if they do that. And obviously, there's a ton more that has to go on. But if you look at this game and you look at what both teams bring, both teams are really good defensively. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. you could argue all day about which unit's better, right? No one's going to win the argument. But the one thing, right, that is going to be in question here is how each offense does. Now, the Winnipeg offense is better right now, but again, turnovers in the playoffs are season defining. I always say that, right? They're really important during the regular season, but they're defining in the playoffs. And I think that if the Riders are able to keep the turnovers, zero balls, not one, not two, not win the turnover battle, zero turnovers, they're going to have a chance. And I think that if this team can keep it close going into that fourth quarter, I'm going to take the Riders.
This guy here, the best in the business in the CFL on the radio, being your color commentator on the Rough Riders Radio Network. Talk to you soon, my friend. Enjoy the game.
Enjoy the game, fellas. Enjoy the call.
You're tuned to Countdown to Kickoff on The Source, 620 CKRM. We've talked offense, we've talked defense. Now, let's get a leg up on special teams. Time for Kicking It with Riders punter John Ryan. Brought to you by the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association. We're beef strong. Find us online at saskbeef.com.
My lawyer, Paul Corbett, says he loves this segment, so maybe my lawyer can give me a discount listening to this segment. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe you can help me. Maybe you can help me out. Short of paying my lawyer bill, John, maybe you could help me out.
Sounds good.
Can you get gift cards for lawyers for Christmas? I just
got a Christmas idea for you, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So, JR, I guess the first question, and some fans ask me this. Do you really sit down and watch this game? Because I know John Ryan, and I think I know the answer, but I'll let you tell us. Do you really watch these games? Can you watch them?
Not really, to be honest. You know, it's like a form of torture for me. I tried to for that first one right after it happened. As I think I told you about 3 weeks or a month ago that I'd have a seatbelt just sitting in the bar watching the game because I was pacing around. And then Sarah and I sat down and watched the second one, and you know, just after that, I follow along and I kind of pop in and out of the room. But just to sit down and watch it is really, really a weird form of torture for me. So I follow along, I follow the stats closely, but I can't sit there for 3 hours and watch it.
So did you follow along with the overtime game? Like, how did you follow along with your buddy Brett Lauther hitting the game-winning field goal?
Yeah, that was about. I was following along, and Sarah actually took me on a wine tasting tour during the game to try to get my mind away from it. And we were standing in line at a restaurant waiting to go in, and that's right when the last 5 minutes, and I was sitting there on my phone in the parking lot, looking like a crazy person, just screaming at my phone, and watched it the overtime last 5 minutes on my phone.
Your buddy Brett, he confidently said that he was the best kicker in the league despite not getting the All-Star Award leading up to that game. Do you think he got in Rene Paradis' head because Rene was not as good as he normally is?
Yeah, I mean, Rene has been an unbelievable kicker in this league. He's, you know, one of the best kickers for the past decade plus. And, you know, he'll be the first one to admit that it wasn't his best game. And, that's what I love about Brett. You know, he'll talk the talk, but then he walks the walk, you know. And, I believe he is the best, kicker in the league, and he has that confidence and, as well as that short-term memory that a kicker needs. And, you know, that's why I love the guy and respect him so much.
So can you remember in your professional career, we talked about the Rams days about getting no respect, but can you remember in your professional career when you were an underdog? Because your team comes in a touchdown dog. Like, they're outside of Rider Nation, and I think even most in Rider Nation would be surprised if your team won today. But when have you been an underdog, a decided underdog in your professional days? Can you think about that?
Yeah, I can't think of one particular game. I kind of think back to the 2012 season, right when the Seahawks kind of became the Seahawks in that season. You know, we had a young, unproven third-round draft pick quarterback who later on became known as Russell Wilson. And, you know, we just had a bunch of guys that were kind of scrubs, is what people would call them from the outside. You know, a bunch of late-round draft picks, a bunch of undrafted guys. And I felt like that whole season, people kind of doubted us and didn't really think we had much, and we were kind of a lucky team to win, you know, whatever it was, 12 games that year. And we kind of felt like you know, we were the underdog that whole season. That kind of started that chip on our shoulder for the kind of the glory years the Seahawks go on from there. And you know, 2013, 14, 15 is where that kind of all started from, is kind of being the underdog in 2012.
Does this team have the depth to overcome injuries? I mean, AC Leonard's a big blow. As we tape this interview, it looks like he's 50-50. I expect him to play. It looks like Micah Tights won't play. Duke Williams is turf toe, so that's going to affect him. I'm sure there's a nice little fat needle he can get to help him out with that. But do you guys have the depth to overcome these injuries in a very tough place to play against a very tough team?
Yeah, it's tough, especially when you look at the depth that Winnipeg has. I mean, they are incredibly deep. You know, I think we're deeper than people think, too. And I think when it comes down to a one game winner go home type situation, I think all bets are off. You know, it's all hands on deck. It doesn't matter how deep you are. Every single player on that team is ready to go, and every single player wants to get in there. So, you know, the depth, I don't think it matters as much right now, you know, because I think every player on that roster is ready to go.
Can the cold weather be an equalizer for you guys if you're an underdog, or is it a case both teams play in the weather so it really doesn't factor in terms of being an equalizer?
Yeah, that's what they often say. You know, you see a team that is maybe a lesser team, they say it's an equalizer in the cold weather. You know, I think, you know, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, we both play in the cold weather all the time. As I said before, Winnipeg's deep, and, you know, you always hear these CFL teams, they say, well, they're a summer team, you know, they're throwing the ball all over the place. They're not built for winter. Well, Winnipeg's built for both. You know?
Yeah.
They're a good team, but that's what happens in pro football. It's a one-game playoff. You know, this isn't the best of seven series. And I'm not saying we couldn't beat them in the best of seven, but it's one game, and it comes down to Sunday afternoon. And, you know, it all comes down to those 3 hours, and anyone can win.
This team has a lot to prove against Winnipeg because, A, you haven't scored a touchdown against them, and, B, actually, you haven't scored a second half point. So I can see why everybody expects this to be a runaway game.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that as I mentioned, the Seahawks back in 2012, this is that all this talk puts a chip on our shoulder. You know, guys are sick of hearing about that. They're sick of hearing about not scoring a touchdown in two games against our rival in Winnipeg. And, you know, I think that kind of lights a fire under you. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great game.
Can rust be a factor? Because that's been kind of the thing that Rider fans and some media are clinging to. Winnipeg's rusty. They haven't played a meaningful game since October 23rd, which is over a month ago when they clinched first and home field advantage. Can you be rusty?
I think potentially. You know, we're not talking about 45-year-old guys playing ball down at the Y. You know, we're talking about finally tuned pro athletes. You know, two weeks off doesn't necessarily make you rusty. It makes you fresh. But then there's something to be said by playing every week. Football is a sport that's meant to be played every week. So you kind of get in that rhythm. So I don't know about a rust, but I think, you know, you could possibly come out and not quite be in a rhythm like you normally are, because, as I said, you know, football is meant to be played once a week.
Hey, 45-year-old guys just don't play at the Y. They quarterback NFL teams to Super Bowls.
Yeah, well, that's an exception, not the rule.
Okay, we always look at the quarterback matchup, but this one's intriguing. Zach Calaro started the 2019 season with the Riders, was bounced around the league from the Riders to Toronto to Winnipeg, and all he's done is be like an MOP candidate, and he's replaced by Cody Fajardo, who is an MOP candidate in 2019. So it's a game with inside the game. I know quarterbacks always are, but this is an intriguing matchup. I want to see the competitor Cody, see what he can do. He can't throw four interceptions this week. I know that much.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, Zach, you know, all he does is win. And, you know, the thing I always hear about Zach is everyone says, oh, he's only one hit away, one more concussion away from being done or whatever. That's all of us are. You know, I'm one concussion away from slipping on the ice and being done for whatever. You know, it's just that's how it all is. He's just a great quarterback. And, you know, I don't know if Cody's talked about it all this week. I'm sure he has had a lot of questions about it, but no matter how much he downplays it, you know, it's in the back of his head that, you know, just the guy that he replaced, and he probably feels like he has something to prove. And I'm just looking forward to it. So I think it's going to be a great chess match.
Okay, so we're watching this this Argos Tiger Cats game before your game here. I'll tell you what, man, I'm going to write a book about the CFL. I love the CFL like you. You had season tickets till you became a player. I've loved this league since I was 7 years old and remembered, you know, I can list you all the names. I won't go through it. But this league survives in spite of itself. I'll write a book some days, you know, only in the CFL or something like that. Because I'll tell you this, man, like the Elks have to play 3 games in 7 days because of breaking COVID protocol. Yet the Argos encourage their quarterback to go to the Raptors game because they own both the Raptors and the Argos to pump up the game. He breaks protocol, and instead of having to sit out for 4 days, they change the rules on the fly, and he only has to sit out for 2 along with some of his teammates. Like, as a fellow player in the league, are you not saying to yourself, what?
man, as you said, I love the CFL like you do. I grew up on it, love it so much. And it's one of those things that about once a week I just shake my head. You know, it's very frustrating. You know, I feel like sometimes they can't get out of their own way, and it's really too bad. And I hope it gets all figured out. And, you know, all the protocols right now with COVID and whatnot is also, you know, a bit of a mess. I don't think there's any right answer or wrong answer. Well, there's lots of wrong answers, I should say. I don't know if there's any right answers. Yeah. And it's all been pretty frustrating this season.
Now, lastly, you were a pro-vaccine guy. So this isn't pro or anti-vaccine or mask or don't mask. But you indeed looked at the protocols when you were driving here from L.A., right? And you were going to turn around and go home because you're like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, as a guy who's now triple vaccinated, you know, I've got my booster shot now that I'm back here in L.A., some of the protocols are a little bit frustrating. I'm kind of a rule follower, but, you know, I just even look what's going on in Toronto right now and with Bella Thompson, you know, going to a fully vaxxed Raptors game where every fan has to be vaccinated, and then going into work the next day in a building where not every player has to be vaccinated. It's more dangerous for him to go into work every day than it is to go to a Raptors game. But, you know, stuff like that gets a little bit frustrating. And, you know, for me personally, I think that it's time to kind of open up the world to vaccinated people. The non-vaxxers, the anti-vaxxers, they can stay inside until whatever happens. But for the vaccinated people, I think it's time to kind of come out of the house and let's reopen the world.
Yeah, like, and lastly, like, it's ridiculous. Like, the Purifoy thing was much ado about nothing. Like, it was trying to make a news story out of nothing. I think the dumbest thing was Purifoy waited 2 hours for his food. I'd question his judgment there. But, like, here's a guy in a restaurant in South Regina, and he can go there. Who knows if everybody's vaccinated in the restaurant, but McLeod Bethel Thompson can't go to a Raptors game. Like, what? This is what I hate about this thing. It's the picking and choosing of the rules through this whole thing. It really, to me, John, feels like East versus West, not just in politics, but in this case, in sports.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, as I said, I don't want to make it political, but, you know, it just the picking and the choosing the spots is what's kind of bothered me all season. You know, to not be able to do certain things while other things are perfectly acceptable has been a little bit frustrating.
John, thanks for this, man. Best of luck. Try to keep your cool as hopefully your team isn't too cold and comes up with a big win in Winnipeg today. Thanks for this, bud.
All right, thank you.
Saskatchewan source for Canada's team. Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Bronc Beer and Bronc Light, a great Buckin' beer brewed in the West and now available in Saskatchewan. And by Farm Boy Realty. Put a farm boy to work for you selling Southeast Saskatchewan farmland. FarmBoyRealty.com. The source, 620 CKRM. Time now for some final thoughts from Ballsy and the experts. Here's the extra point, brought to you by Warren Steinle, your member of parliament for Regina Louvain. Visit warrensteinle.com or on social media at Warren Steinle.
2013 Hamilton leads Toronto in the fourth quarter. Argos just were stopped, but Hamilton was offside on a third down and short, so we'll watch that as we get ready for this game. Okay, guys, quickly, before we head to Winnipeg, Wes, who do you got in this game and why?
Don't ask me to put money on it, but I'm going to take the Riders. I just feel like the defense is going to make some opportunistic turnovers, turn over Caleros a couple of times, and I feel like just the way the Riders' offense has been like sputtery, I just think that they're going to have some wrinkles that Winnipeg can't prepare for. We know what Winnipeg is going to give the Riders, but I don't think the Riders have an identity, so some guys are going to make some plays that are unexpected.
Mike, quickly, who do you got and why?
No logic. I just think the Riders are going to win. I think the weather's going to be kind of an equalization factor, and they're going to win. I think it's going to be an ugly game, just turn out kind of like last week, exciting but ugly, and they'll win.
However it shakes down, Wes Cates and the professor Don Hewitt will join me after the game, but now we're headed to Winnipeg for Derek and Luke in the Rider Nation portion of the pregame show. Enjoy the game.